Hey there. Welcome to The Unpresentable Parts, your go-to spot for conversations that matter, hosted by Tim Blake and Titus Walelo. We're breaking down barriers and building bridges, one story at a time. Tim and Titus invite you into a space where the vulnerable becomes powerful. Ready to join the conversation? Let's dive in.
Hey, welcome to the Unpresentable Parts podcast. My name is Tim Blake, and normally I would introduce our host, Titus Walelo, but he is mourning the death of his brother, and he will join us soon enough, so please keep him in your prayers. Again, we're the Unpresentable Parts podcast, and we're going to continue our series today on Views from the Valley, Psalm 23, verse 4. Which reads, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil. And we're talking about the valley seasons of our walk with God and some of the challenges. We've talked about grief. We've talked about battling depression. Today, with our brother Ryan Painter, and we'll introduce him in just a second, he's going to be sharing a little bit about anxiety, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But I'll let Ryan introduce himself. Ryan, what up?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Tim, thanks for having me. My name is Ryan Painter. My wife and I lead a church up here in the great city of Cleveland, Ohio.
Cleveland rocks.
Cleveland does rock. But don't get me started there. Okay. My unpresentable parts deal definitely with the issue of anxiety. And if I could be even more specific to that, that of panic. And this horrible, horrendous feeling that comes over a person when they begin to panic.
Okay, hold on just for a second on that. We're going to dive in. So, a little bit on your background. Where are you from?
I am from Cleveland, Ohio. At least a suburb of Cleveland. So, I am a Cleveland guy. I'm an Ohio guy through and through. I went to the Ohio State University. That's right. My wife up here in Cleveland. I became a Christian in Columbus, Ohio during my college years. My wife and I went on to start a church in Toledo, Ohio, right when we were wed. And now I am back in the great city of Cleveland.
How long have you been in Cleveland?
I have been back here about, I think it's 7.5 years. So it's been a little bit now. Very happy about it. Very happy to be here. Just bought a home, actually.
Listen, your actual unpresentable part's right behind you, but we'll let you expose that if you choose to. Any case, for me, if I were to share my unpresentable part today, I'm just tired. I'm physically, emotionally, spiritually tired. And it's a lot. So everything feels like a lot. Mourning with a lot of friends, friends that have lost their mothers and fathers and brothers. And recently a brother lost his son. And so it just weighs on you. In our fellowship, I think, Ryan, you can identify where we don't just go to church together, but we're family. So it's very unique. And so one of the challenges is carrying other people's stuff because they're your people. So you feel it, you carry it with them. So it becomes a lot. But I'm excited about this time to talk. And so first and foremost, you and I have a little conflict resolution to get worked out. Since it's the unpresentable parts, we can do it here, and then we'll get to all your panic and anxiety stuff. But first and foremost, we will have no more Steph Curry slander on social media, my brother. It's unheard of.
Oh, yes, we will.
So I'm fine with Tom Brady slander, New England Patriots slander. That's where you and I bonded, where we became partners in crime, if you will, being in New England. And with all the obnoxious Patriot fans. So you and I bonded there. But then Cleveland v. my Golden State Warriors, my Dubs. And why do you hate Steph Curry?
Oh, I don't hate Steph Curry. I actually like Steph Curry. I like a lot about him. What I find, what my interesting take on Mr. Curry is, I believe, now everyone's going to tune out after I say it, I believe he's overrated. Now, does that mean I think he stinks?
That's the whack. That's the whack. They won't take alarm.
Top 25 player of all time. Okay. I'm not saying he's terrible. I think he's one of the top 25 players of all time. But there's no way you could consider that guy a top 10 player. Not when it comes to winning. But that's probably another podcast for a different for a different day. But no, I can honor the fact that I won't be on social media that much saying anything bad about Steph in 2024, because you kind of make the playoffs to be relevant. And I don't see them making the playoffs.
It's all good. I just want to clear the air. And so right for all of you that may by chance be basketball fans, you can deal with Ryan. So Ryan, now that we've got that squared away, you became a Christian at Ohio State, correct?
That is correct.
How old were you?
I was 20 years old at the time.
Okay. Yeah, I was 19. So you and I were close in age, though, different eras. And so did you grow up going to church? What's your background?
A little bit. We were just kind of good old American family. We did the church thing. I would say that I went to a Methodist church growing up. Mm-hmm. It was very close to our house. And, you know, you kind of see in most churches in America are kind of community-based churches. So you see the different people from high school or whatever. And some went to that one, some went to this one, that sort of thing. But, I did some of their doctrinal stuff and the whole confirmation class and all that. I'm the youngest, though. And once I got to high school, we started kind of phasing out. So we were never like really into our Bibles or anything like that. We were churchgoers, but that was about it. So it was good. It was good because it gave me a good basis for God and Jesus. But it didn't take, if you will, during the high school years. So
yeah, seeds were planted, though.
Seeds were planted for sure.
And so what made you make the decision to be a Christian in college?
Well, I guess we can kind of get into the story a little bit. I went to Ohio State. It was the only college I applied to because that's where all my friends went. And I had always grown up as a very insecure guy, always wanting to be popular, always wanting to be liked, and yet not like bold. I wasn't the athletic guy. I didn't really have my niche, if you will. And I kind of found my niche in high school through kind of the partying aspect. And, I became a big drinker when I was in high school. And that's all I wanted to talk about. And that's all I wanted to do. And, kind of rose through the social ranks that way. So that was a big part of my life. And so my freshman year at Ohio State, it was just a mess. Just a mess. We were always drinking. And at that point, I wasn't so much into smoking pot. It was just drinking and drinking and drinking. But I had an episode or two revolving around the panic, which really, really, really shook me up and made me reevaluate a lot of things in life. And so when the time came, so even to the point where about my sophomore year, as I was kind of recovering and trying to figure out life, I started thinking, well, maybe I should start going to church again. And that was the beginning of a time where I started to kind of seek God to a small degree. And then it wasn't until later that I was met by some real committed Christians, disciples of Jesus. And, you know that story, right? And kind of goes from there. So I became a Christian my junior year.
Okay. When you say you know the story for our fellowship, if you're not part of our fellowship, generally speaking, we would study the Bible for depending on where your faith is and your kind of station in life. I think for myself, it was about 3.5-4 weeks I studied the Bible and made the decision to get baptized. Were you about the same?
Yeah, about 5 weeks. I came to church for about 2 months and was pretty regularly asked, hey, you want to do Bible studies? You want to do Bible studies? That was our vibe back then. And I kept pushing that off. And I really liked the church, but I could tell these people are serious about their faith. And I ain't about that right now. So it took me a little while, but once I got into the Bible, my heart really changed.
Mm. It's, you mentioned before we even go there. And so you became a Christian. What led you into paid ministry? When did you feel called into paid ministry or even leadership within the church?
Probably pretty early on. I was fortunate enough. We had just started the church in Columbus. When I say we, I mean they had started the church at the end of 1996, and I got met in January of 1997. And when you're on a church planting, the culture of that type of church is very aggressive in a good way. You know, like, we know what mm-hmm. we're there to do. We're really trying to build a ministry at Ohio State. And it's kind of like, if you don't know any better, you just think this is what Christianity is. So from a very early age, I was out inviting people and, you know, leading Bible studies, and I didn't know what I was doing, but I was really going for it, and I really got a taste for it, and like, man, I enjoy this. I just thought there's just nothing better than like having a real purpose in my life, and so I wanted to do ministry. I just thought this seems like a total blast. So there you go. So I pursued that and was lucky enough to be able to, God made that come true. So,
and were you married? And you can share about your wife and your two kids, your son and daughter, if you want. But did you come into paid ministry and then get married? Or
yeah, came into paid ministry. I was at Ohio State for just a little bit, and then kind of the whole staff, which was only three of us, moved up to Cleveland, Ohio, which was great for me. And I led, tried to start kind of a campus ministry at Kent State, failed miserably, came up to Case Western and tried to do some ministry up here, kind of failed miserably again, then eventually started having a little bit of success once humility came in. But my wife was actually converted as a grad student at Case Western. And so we met, and then she ended up going in ministry, and the rest is history.
Okay. And your children are, I keep saying kids, they are kids, but they're a little bit older.
Yeah. So my oldest is a sophomore right now at the University of Cincinnati. And my youngest is a senior in high school up here in Cleveland, but will be also attending University of Cincinnati. Go Bearcats.
Let's go Bearcats. Let's go Kelsey Brothers. So, okay. So you came into paid ministry, and then you guys went and started the church at Toledo, correct?
That is correct, yeah.
Okay. So explain kind of your as we're talking about anxiety, you call it panic. Explain a little bit kind of your experience, when it first started, how it manifested, yeah. Even before you were a Christian, coming on into the church.
So my freshman year, Tim, I was, you know, like I said, living it up at Ohio State, just having a good old time and enjoying life, and really was into drinking and all that sort of stuff. And my roommate was more kind of into the smoking pot thing. And we had started kind of drifting a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I remember very specifically a Friday morning. This is going to be a wild story, especially for a minister to tell. But it was a Friday morning, and my friend said, hey, do you want to go smoke at my brother's place? And I almost like as an olive branch, I was like, sure, let's go do that. You know, I'll just skip class, whatever. We'll just do that. And so that's what we did. And, you know, it's like anything. When you haven't done it in a little while, your tolerance is very low. And I was in a very cloudy room that day with a lot of people that had been smoking for quite some time on a regular basis. And I was out of my mind. It was not a good situation. I mean, it was fine. We were just watching movies, and I just thought, well, we're just going to cruise the rest of the day out like this. We're just going to sit and watch movies and chill. But they all put on their book bags and said, we're going to class, because that's what they did. They kind of like lived in that, and, you know, everything they did in their eye. Yeah. And I was like, oh, it's cool. I'm going to do that. And no joke, I decided to go to class. And this is the most high I've ever been in my life. And I remember walking up these steps, It was four stories. The elevator was out. And I was just out of breath. And I walk into this class, and it was unreal. I walk into this class, and it's a very small class, maybe about 20 students. Mm-hmm. I remember at the beginning of the semester, the teacher had said she finds it very rude when people walk out in the middle of class. So once I was in, I was in. And it was a health class, and the topic of that day was drugs and alcohol, and a police officer shows up to deliver the lesson. And something came over my body that I did not know what it was at the time, which made it incredibly scary. I basically had my first ever anxiety or panic attack. But in my mind, it was something with the drugs. It was something this, and there's a policeman, and I lost it. It was all internal. I just felt like I am going to die. Like I never felt anything like it. It was all internal, but it was showing external. I mean, I'm sweating bullets, and I am beside myself, just concerned. Mm-hmm. And I remember praying. This is the level of spirituality I was at. I remember praying, because that's what you do when you're a little bit religious and you get yourself in a situation like this, is you pray. And I remember saying, God, if you can get me out of the situation without me dying or being arrested, I promise I won't smoke pot again for a month.
At least you're honest.
Oh, check this out. God held up his end of the bargain. I did not hold up my end of the bargain. As about 3 or 4 weeks later, I'm like, I'm good. But there started this weird thing that was coming over my body that I had no clue what it was. And I remember I became terrified. Anytime I would smoke pot, instantly I would get these same feelings and I would stop. And then one particular day, it was after a long weekend of drinking, I had one of these instances, and I wasn't drunk and I wasn't high, and I got freaked out and I thought, I'm going to die. And I went to the hospital, and there started my career-long battle with panic disorder, which I did not know at the time. So I'll speed this up a little bit. I got so bad, Tim, towards the end of that, we were in the quarter system back then. Towards the end of the quarter, I remember I was so scared to just live. I didn't think about drinking or doing anything. I was so scared I started to become agoraphobic, which meant I remember I called my mom and I said, Mom, it's a week, or, you know, finals are next week, but you have to come pick me up. I have been in this bed for the last 24 hours and I'm afraid to get out of it. And my mom's awesome. She's like, be right there, and drove 6 hours and came and picked me up. But I was literally just frozen in life, because I was I was just terrified that one of these little attacks was going to happen to me. So there was my story with anxiety, the beginning of it.
So when you start studying the Bible, and when you became a Christian, was it still an issue?
Very much so. That was the end of my freshman year. I ended up dropping out of school, didn't come back until the fall of the next year. So I missed a full quarter and I was broken. I remember when I first went home, there was this kind of mad dash to figure out what is going on with me, because everything I was saying wasn't making any sense. And I was seeing doctors and they were putting heart monitors on me and they were doing this and they were doing that. And the best conclusion they came up with was I fried my brain with some type of drug, which I was not a heavy drug user at all. I just thought, that just doesn't sound right. But it became a point where I was so afraid. The only time I'd feel comfortable is late at night. And there was maybe 2-3 in the morning, an infomercial came on about anxiety. What was it? It was the Midwest Center for something. I don't know. And I went, whoa. That was the first time I thought, I started thinking I was going crazy. I was in a very, very bad state. And when I saw that, my parents set me up with a psychologist or psychiatrist, and he heard me out. And he said, fill this out. And I was like, I filled it out. I'm like, doctor, whatever it is this paper is, that's what I've got. And he said, you've got a severe anxiety disorder. And I'm like, what? Like, that's what this is? But it was one of the greatest days of my life, because I really thought, I mean, it's a scary feeling when it's like, you're going through something and you feel like no one understands, right? And so that was a very relieving feeling. So when I got back to school, you know, the drugs were very different back then. It was heavy medication. It was Xanax, and it was, I didn't even remember all the stuff. So I was just lost in life. I just felt like I was this lost little puppy. And that's when I started kind of pursuing the God thing. But then I started doing the drinking thing. And then I do the guy, just lost. That's who I was in my sophomore year.
Okay. And so you become a Christian and life is good. So did you have any more episodes between the time you became a Christian at 20 and the time you came into paid ministry?
Very few, if any. I really struggled with anxiety my sophomore year and my junior year. Once I became a Christian, I almost felt like I was healed. I obviously wasn't going. I had it in my brain. Anxiety is a lot of what you think. And I had it in my brain that my anxiety was very linked to my drinking and definitely drugs. And so becoming a disciple, I'm like, well, that's gone. And I tell you, man, going into ministry was wild, because I remember even my junior year, I went to a class. And they had said, at the end of the class, you're going to have to give a presentation. And bro, I would drop that. I would drop those classes, because I'm like, there's no way I could ever get in front of a crowd of people and speak. Oh. And so when I found the church and when I found God, I just thought, I started speaking at church, communion messages, all these things. I'm like, man, I am healed. So yeah, I had no problem. I went into ministry and I didn't really feel anything for a good solid 10 years.
Wow.
Okay. And then it came down.
And so it came back when you were in Toledo?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
So how did that start?
Oh man. So basically, I mean, everything was good with my anxiety and a lot of with panics. Anxiety is interesting for me, because most people would consider me a very like low stressed guy. I'm fly by the seat of my pants guy. Everything's going to be awesome. Optimist. I am not the guy sitting around worried about like just a worry wart and I can't move. But for this one particular aspect, this panic, that was my weakness. And so it was roughly, I'd say about 2008. And you know, hindsight's 2020, but I remember I was at a low point. I had interviewed to lead the church here in Cleveland. It was not selected. And I did not handle that well at all. I took that very, very hard. And then soon after that, being in Toledo, the brother sat me down and said, "Hey, we're not terribly happy with your leadership. We think your wife is awesome, but we're concerned about you." And I had a year or two of those types of talks, and I just felt like I was exposed, and I was extremely insecure. And those are good remedy, or those are good breeding ground for panic and anxiety, as I've come to learn that this is really tied to a lot of just insecurity and lack of confidence. And so I remember having a panic attack, my first one in a decade, and it was every bit as terrible as I remember them being. I remember we were at Tim Hortons. I remember the Bible study, who it was. The guy became a Christian, but it was a marked moment of, I am in big trouble, because if this stuff comes back, I'm in trouble. And now I'm not 18 anymore. I'm 29. I got two kids. I got a family. I've got a, and it really came hard, and it really came back hard, and it was rough. Right.
So if I can, what does it feel like? And I'll share my experience in a bit, but what does it feel like to you when a panic attack or anxiety attack comes along?
Sure. I mean, I've learned a lot about it. Feel free to cut any of this out. It might be a little too much detail, but you have this thing in your brain called the amygdala. And the amygdala is, God has built the body in such an amazing way the amygdala is there to keep you safe. It's kind of your the caveman aspect of your brain, right? You hear the stories of women lifting up cars to save their children. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear of people when there's a fire, and how you know, whatever. You can, the amygdala, it's this little panic sensor. And when it senses that you are in a life-threatening situation, it's kind of like a light switch. Bloop, it goes off. What happens? Mm. All your blood comes to your central organs. So you kind of lose feeling in your hands and you're hit with a whole bunch of cortisol and the body is responding and saying, we're going to keep you alive. What a panic disorder is that thing goes off in the grocery store and you go, and it's all internal. And it's like, why is my heart going 100,000 miles an hour? Why am I shaking and I can't feel my toes and my fingers right now? And, you know, people mistake it for heart attack a lot. Now, being a younger guy, I didn't mistake it for that. But it's a real physical reaction that happens. And the word I always use is, I'm not scared. The word I use is terror. I feel terrorized. Mm. Like, you feel like you are going to die. It, especially when you don't know what it is. Right. Like now when I come on, like, I know I'm okay. And that helps to kind of, you know, make it go away. But it's a terrible feeling. You have tons of racing thoughts and you quickly spiral out of control mentally into thinking everything is falling apart around me. Mm-hmm. And so I really struggle with public speaking as a minister who leads a church and does it twice a week of just like, oh my goodness, trying to hold it all together, if that makes sense. Knowing intellectually I'm okay, but feeling internally I'm dying. It's a weird feeling.
Thank you for sharing. And I do want to just really quickly, I hear it in my own head. It just may be my own thing. But to be clear, Ryan nor myself, we are not mental health professionals.
No.
We are not experts except for our own experiences. And so I do want to make that clear. So if there's something that may be a little off or not precise, hey, we're two ministers who became Christians at 19 and 20, and we're just sharing kind of our experiences and our walk. So I just want to make that clear.
Yeah.
So when this started to happen again, did you feel comfortable sharing this with your wife, with kind of your peer group or ministers around you? How did you deal with it initially?
Okay, so when I was in college, there was such a stigma around mental health. I had been diagnosed. Remember I said I put like heart monitors on and stuff?
Yeah.
They had determined that I had like mitral valve prolapse, which I'm sure is a thing. It was just something that was on, like, maybe he has that. When I was in college, bro, I lied to all my everybody because I would go to see a psychologist or psychiatrist and I didn't want that. So I just lied. I said, yeah, I got heart issue. And they have to check it every 2 weeks. Just bold-faced lie. I'm a Christian. I didn't care. I was humiliated by it. Nobody was going to know about it at all.
And nobody was talking about mental health in the 90s.
No. I mean, and one of the most embarrassing things is I got rushed to the hospital, one of my first ever panic attacks. And by the time the ER got to me, my body had actually started to calm. And they're like, we think you have a sinus infection. You know, you get back to the dorm room my freshman year and everyone's like, Ryan, are you okay? Like EMS was here. And I'm like, oh yeah, sinus infection. It was humiliating. The older I got, the more I started to share. But when it first started happening, I didn't want to tell anybody about it. I definitely talked to my wife about it. And I talked to maybe one or two friends, but honestly, not really. I didn't like it. I wanted to pray this thing away. I just wanted it to be gone. And no, I felt very humiliated by it. Like it was some form of weakness. And so, it took me a long time before I started realizing, kind of walking into it and embracing it. I remember having one of my first conversations with a brother named Keith West. he's an elder down in Louisville, and he was just great. He's like, oh, dude, why didn't you share with me earlier? Like, because I don't know. I just, you know, felt like I couldn't. Now I can't talk enough about it. Mm. I totally flipped. I mean, once you kind of lean into it, you start to realize, oh, it actually helps. It helps people, but it helps me.
Yeah.
To the point where, you know, when I interviewed again back for the job in Cleveland, I remember just my initial interview, they're like, this is an interesting, you know, career route. You went from leading a mission team and a church planting for 10 years to becoming a campus minister. Like, what's up? And I said, well, let me just, I said, I just need you all to hear this. Let me tell you my story. Give me 5 minutes. And I kind of told them my story of anxiety. And I said, I can make no promises that I'm going to be okay when I'm in Cleveland. I'm kind of petrified, honestly, to come and do this. And what I learned from a spiritual perspective, people love humility and they love being authentic and real. And so one of the many spiritual lessons I've learned along the way was this idea of, you know, the minister who tries to come across as Superman, he's going to fall. Absolutely. Me. You're creating an image that is impossible to uphold. And the moment you start being real and vulnerable, the fear of the minister is people won't respect me. People look down on me. People won't be inspired. You know, I'll be an excuse. It's like totally the opposite. People are like, oh, like they actually want to follow people that are real and honest. And so anyway, that was a little side note, but
no,
lots of good lessons.
I think we always manage as church leaders, there is the perception that we get from our culture, right? You know, the MJs, the LeBrons, the Tigers, the whoever it is, like these singular figures that's carrying the whole team, you know.
LeBron. Thank you for not saying Steph, but LeBron. Yeah.
You get my point. It's just this.
Yeah.
That John Wayne kind of culture. It's American. It's you got to be the man and be strong and no time to be weak. I'll rest when I die. I have said that as a Christian. I'll rest when I die. So the whole idea of weakness, which biblically is right there. I used to think it was in small print, but no, it's the bold print. Jesus showed weakness. The Apostle Paul said, when I'm weak, I am strong.
Yep.
And so, and I was going to ask you about that, knowing kind of the history of our fellowship and especially leadership and paid ministry in our fellowship is how long did it take you? And I don't know if you still do. I still hear echoes of the past in my head. That create these expectations I feel as a minister that really aren't there. They're just stuff that used to be, things that used to be there that I still hear. And so for you, and now you're a minister and you're starting to have these panic attacks again, and you're leading a church. You're out in kind of Toledo. You're out by yourself, even though you've got churches around you, but you're very singular, right? It can feel very lonely. So how did you kind of open up and begin to deal with this in our environment back then? I'm assuming what year was this? 2000?
You said 2008, 2009.
Okay. So we were a little better then. We're a little better by then.
Yeah, we were much better then. I mean, it got to the point where I just don't enjoy my life at all. Like I'm so afraid. Now specifically, public speaking had become kind of the mark in my brain of what happens with anxiety and panic. And again, I'm no doctor, but I paid enough copays to learn a few things along the way here. Your brain targets things or it marks things, scary situations, right? You might hear the old war vet who a helicopter flies over in 2024 and he hasn't been in the military in 20 years, but his buddy got killed. You know, he saw a helicopter crash and that sends him into some kind of, you know, the brain is going, oh, I remember that sound. We don't like that sound. And your amygdala, it doesn't think well. It just reacts. It's not there to think. It's to help you. And so somehow my brain has really marked that public speaking, my body starts to believe I'm in a very dangerous situation, and panic comes to get me out. I become Superman, right? I got the adrenaline and all this. And so, you know, not a great profession when you got public speaking with an anxiety disorder. And I just thought, I'm broken. Like, I don't like my life. Like, I'm scared. All I can think about is this upcoming Sunday. This is all I can think about. And it's consuming, and I'm tired. And, you know, the advice became, maybe get yourself in a different situation where you're not leading a church. You can kind of, you know, still be in the ministry, but kind of work on this a little bit. And my friend Tom Caswell is gracious enough to take us under his wing again. And I had known Tom from when I'd become a Christian. And so out to New England we came, and that's where I got to meet the wonderful Tim Blake. But I was in real bad shape then. I mean, the only thing that could get me up on stage was a heck of a lot of Ativan, which is this kind of pretty potent drug that you get, you know, post-op surgery type stuff. But it's like, and again, I don't have all my words right here, but the beta blocker, it really does a good job of stopping panic and totally sedating you. And that was kind of my best friend for a while as I kind of figured things out. And yeah, there you go.
And so
probably not answering question. I'm like,
No. This is perfect. It's, and again, the timeline helps because, you know, obviously, well, for those of you that don't know, our fellowship of churches, our tribe, if you will, went through a major realignment in 2003. And so, a lot of our paradigm and our fellowship shifted a bit. And so it made room to have talks about mental health. It made room for, I mean, we're way late, but we're now just starting to have sabbatical policies within our churches for ministers. But in the past, it was, hey, get over it. And I was thinking about our time together, Ryan. I was wondering if people ever came to you with I think it's Psalm 34 about not fretting, or Philippians 4 about, don't be anxious about anything, but with everything, with prayer, petition, with thanksgiving, you know, present your request to God, and the peace that transcends all understanding will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. I can imagine someone telling you that, bro, you just got to get grateful.
Well, somebody told me that, but the problem was it was me. People are actually very graceful with me, but I had a very immature view of God. You know, I was kind of one of these guys that, like, I would really think, oh, Christians aren't going to get, this is going to sound ridiculous, but I remember thinking as a young Christian, as a 20-year-old, Christians probably don't even get cancer. God just protects us from everything. In an extremely naive view. And I had lived a very, very privileged life up to that point. And so I struggled with God. I was very unhappy and couldn't figure out, why on earth are you taking a guy who has devoted his life to you into public speaking and turning him into a, you know, just a guy that's, I couldn't get up and say hello in front of the church without some kind of medication. Like, this doesn't make any sense. And I think that was the transformation from a spiritual perspective that I needed. So I would say this, I really never felt like I had any negative, you know, discipling, if you will. It wasn't the quick fix. So I felt like the church was very gracious with me, but I had my own set of pressure that I was putting upon myself. And there was some real change in my walk with God, in my understanding of who God was, and my understanding of the scriptures. You know, I'm not the first guy to struggle with public speaking. How about Moses?
Yes.
It's in our Bible, bro. Like, the dude's like, you gotta do it. I can't do it. Like Moses couldn't do it. Like, what is going on here?
Right.
And I started thinking, oh, wait a second. Maybe this is of God. This isn't just some demonic thing that I have. And maybe there's a bigger lesson here. And so, so there was a lot of pressure, but it was a lot of the, it was my own pressure and my own simplistic view of God that needed a reset.
And so what was your lowest point where you just felt like, I don't know if I'm going to make it. I don't know. What was your lowest point?
The lowest point is when I quit. I got to a point where I was probably about 2 years into New England, and I just felt like I wasn't getting any better. And I remember I was a campus minister, and my speaking, I didn't have to do too much of it. Maybe one Sunday a month and maybe one Wednesday a month. And it would just take, bro, it would take everything out of me the week up to it. Like I just hated it. I'm like, all I can think about is, how am I going to get through this? What am I going to do? How am I going to survive this one? And is this going to be the one where it's my last one? Cause I can't do this anymore. And I just got to a point where I thought, I just can't live this way anymore. And so I remember very specifically taking my wife to breakfast and I said, hey, I have given it a shot. I have moved here. I've done, 2 years of heavy counseling. I have been open with everyone. I have met with ministers. I feel like I gave it my all. Mm. It's not getting better. I'm hanging it up at the end of the semester. Let's prepare. And there you go.
I made
a decision, and that was really hard, but that was the decision. And maybe a week or two later, it was almost like the pressure was off. I remember going to a midweek service, and I had to just see, maybe it was like 20 people. I was teaching a class, and I thought, I'm not going to take any medicine today, which none of this Ativan. And I thought, what are you going to do? You're going to fire me? It was this weird thing. It was like, that was actually very freeing. And I got up there, and when I stopped caring about my job and my this and my that, because the decision was made, I was done.
Mm.
I got up there and spoke, and I had no issues at all without any medicine. And it was at that point in time I thought, breakthrough, something just clicked. I've been waiting for this for a while. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of those little lessons, right, from God that you've got to learn of like, I'm starting to see the source of this thing. This thing has power over me because of all these different things. So I started to kind of figure it out, if that makes sense.
Okay. So obviously you didn't quit.
Chubb the dog. I don't know if you can hear my dog barking downstairs.
That's all right. So now that I have a dog, I am a lot less judgmental. I don't even know if you can see my hat here. My dog chewed up. And you'll like this. This is a Twins hat. He chewed this up. He also chewed up and destroyed my Houston Astros hat. So I know you really appreciate that.
It's a holy dog right there.
So
get on a podcast with a Cleveland guy and wear a Twins hat, by the way.
Hey, listen. I got Brewers hats. I got them.
I'm fine with Brewers. They're National League. You stay away from my Guardians. All right, anyway.
Oh, that's right. Guardians. So, listen. So, you had that. You felt like that was a breakthrough. I'm assuming your wife was supportive.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, you had that breakthrough. Then what?
Then what? Things just started getting a lot better. I started trimming down my medication levels considerably, which really freed up life a lot more. And panic's one of those things that when you're not experiencing it, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. And you start, I start having more and more success and more and more success and more and more success. And then it got to a point where I said, I'm actually going to try this on a Sunday morning. And I did. And I was able to get through the sermon, and it wasn't a get through the sermon. It was, oh my goodness. I remember thinking, I never thought this day would ever happen again. Like I never thought there would be a day where I could get up and give a Sunday morning sermon without any type of sedative or medication. And that's when I just felt like I could start dreaming again and start like, oh my goodness. Like maybe I do have some hope. I just felt hopeless for so long. There you go. So it just continually got better. And my dream, I love Cleveland. And I always wanted to be the minister here of this church. And sure enough, the minister called me and said, hey, I'm likely going to be stepping down and taking a job elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And wanted to know if you'd be interested in coming into Cleveland and taking over. And I went, oh, God,
what are you doing to me? Like, right in the moment where I'm starting to feel a little bit of confidence, I'm like, lead a church? Like, I told everybody, I'm never leading a church again. Because yeah. the amount of public speaking is so high.
Yeah.
No. And then I'm like, man, it's Cleveland. I got to. All right, let me. And so I wrestled a little bit and then put in the application. And then kind of the rest is history. I kind of told him my story. I said, I am not out of the woods. I'm seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, but I am not mm-hmm. out of the woods. But they were incredibly gracious with me. And here I am in Cleveland.
Wow. So last couple questions. So yeah. During the pandemic, did you, because that was a highly intense time, like there was a lot of stressors going on during that period, the uncertainty, leading a church, all the stuff that we had to juggle during that time. Did you have any triggers during that time, or you've been able to manage pretty well?
Oh, Tim, I missed the pandemic. I was thriving during the pandemic. Are you telling me I get to perform, I get to do a sermon, and I can pre-record it and go back and edit it? I had a year and a half of stress-free preaching. I was loving life. I seriously loved it. I did not want to go back to in-person service because this is like that was like the best. Let me back up. This is incredibly selfish and related to what we're talking about. Clearly, there was a lot of the pandemic that I don't want to go back to at all.
Yeah.
The loss of life. Hear me when I say that. For me personally, with this one particular issue, the idea of being able to just go out in nature and I loved it. Minister said they hated getting behind the camera and doing it. I loved it. It was wonderful. And if ever I would feel like anxiety, I could go, hold on, and just go mute for a second. You know, like this, it was awesome. So that's a unique answer. But I think what you're trying to ask, though, is more of the with everything going on. And mm-hmm. I was really proud of the church in Cleveland here. I felt like we handled things very, very well. And the church is very mature here. So, you know, it's unique. I think one unique aspect of our churches is we live in our churches are incredibly diverse. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I feel like most American churches are not, they're very much, I don't know if they're not diverse. Well, they're not, but they're community churches, right? You typically are around people like mm-hmm. you. And so mm-hmm. any form of political view that you share from the pulpit, either side of the aisle, you're going to get a lot of amens, right? Well, in our church, a little different. You know, you're not going to get amens from both sides, you know?
No.
And so we're in some senses in a challenging spot in that the diversity that we have within our church, it you had to think twice before you had to speak, which was a really good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, Cleveland, Ohio, in and of itself is a very interesting place. It's very interesting. So,
yeah.
And you're doing well now. You've been able to manage. I do have that was my last question was, how are you doing today?
You caught me in a very interesting time. So, we took a little, my daughter's a senior in high school. We took a spring break trip with my family. And I had it all planned out. I have this, you know, my little prescription of Ativan, and had it all planned out where I know I'm out of medicine, but I'm going to come back. And then I'm going to have my doctor appointment and I'll be all set for the following Sunday. And so we're driving back the day before Easter and it's about 5:45 in the evening. I've got my sermon all written, everything, and it hits me. I'm getting my medicine later this week. I have nothing for Easter Sunday. And immediately my body started to panic. We're recording this mid-April. I mean, this is just before. And my wife and I talked and prayed and we're like, you know what? I feel like I'm in a good spot. And I have learned a lot of techniques over the years to kind of help me. And so I got up on Easter Sunday and preached without any form of, beta blocker, benzo, whatever you call those things. And mm-hmm. I was perfectly fine. And so I have since reduced again. And so I still use a little bit of half milligram to help me out, but I'm loving life. I feel more confident than I have in a long, long time. And, I'm resigned to whatever this is, it is. And, you know, kind of my perspective is anxiety, panic helped me to become a Christian. There has been no way back in 1997 that I would have said yes to an invitation to church without feeling completely hopeless and lost. And that's what panic did for me early on. I didn't like it. I wish it would have come a different way, but it helped me. And so as much as it's been my enemy and my Achilles heel, it's also been my friend in that it has taught me kind of the life lessons, if you will. And so I most certainly never want to experience again, because, you know, in the midst of it, it's a horrifying situation, a horrifying feeling. But, you know, I'm 47 years old now. I've been doing this for quite some time. And if, you know, it's okay. Like, I've just come to accept that this is something that happens to me. And it's an indicator of some things that I need to look at and consider. Mm-hmm. But I'm good either way. So I am far from being, I can't say I'm panic free. I haven't had a major episode in about a year, which is about as long as I've ever gone. And I hope to never have one again. But if I do, I don't think my faith will be shipwrecked like it used to be. And here for the long haul, brother.
Come on. I appreciate you sharing. If you were to give, let's say you met someone there, or they're someone on the podcast, they're listening, they've been battling, or they think they're having panic issues or anxiety issues. If you were to give them three things, any spiritual, practical help, what would you share? Three different things.
Top of my head, the Bible is loaded with passages about fear. Psalm 23, verse 4, right? Like this whole podcast, right? It's all about it's fear. It's even though I go through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. There are great words in the Bible for you to study. Words like fret. Fret is an interesting word. You know, worry, these sort of things. In the Bible, so I've done so many years of counseling and stuff, and it started to hit me, you know, first year was like, and a lot of what this counselor is telling me is a lot about scripture, you know, taking your thoughts captive and making them obedient to Christ. That's something that I have to actually do and stop myself when I begin having racing thoughts and things like that. Your Bible, though, is definitely not a self-help book on anxiety, has no shortage of passages that can help you. God understands it. You're not the first to feel that way. And Bible's a great place, to be able to heal from anxiety. I think from maybe a medical angle, I would say never be afraid to get help. Never be afraid to get help. And fortunately, that's like there's so much less of a stigma than there used to be. Talking things through is very helpful. It's therapeutic. It's you start to learn you're not alone in things. And for me, that gave me a great amount of confidence. And then it just gives you lots of practical skills on how to overcome the different things that you have. And so there's two. I'm going to give you two for now and see if a third one pops up.
Okay, that's fine. And I really appreciate, Ryan, that. So this is a confession. I'm presenting.
Bada bing, bada boom, go.
Okay, confession. I used to judge people with anxiety, and I'll tell you how it's impacted my life. So I'm, again, similar to you, like I've never been a worry person, a stress person. And so for me, I'm like, you know, you just got to have more faith, get over it. And so my wife, we got married in 2001, and she wouldn't mind me sharing. But she, when she moved to LA, when we got married in 2001, after we got married, she had a couple of panic attacks, and I had to take her to the ER, similar to your story. She thought she was having a heart attack, couldn't figure out what the heck was going on. And it turns out it was panic. And I never really grasped it. She shared about the tightness in her chest and the it hindered her ability to breathe. And then the lack of control you feel, right? The lack of, like, you're like, I can't stop this. Well, it's not stopping. And so that gets your adrenaline going more. And so, I'm like, okay, my wife's a little wound up. That's why I'm here, right? So in 2018, I was on vacation with the family. We're doing a helmet dive where you go to 25 feet down, you put on a helmet like the old, those big glass helmets or whatever, so it pumps oxygen. So I'm walking on the bottom of the ocean with my son and my brother. And all of a sudden, I'm walking on the bottom, like water, I'm great with it, swimming, all that stuff. But I'm walking on the bottom, and all of a sudden, I'm getting short of breath. And so I'm like, well, maybe it's just you. And I'm thinking, this guy's not pumping oxygen in here. So I turn around, I start walking back, and I'm telling myself, do not panic. I look over at the guy who's diving. I'm like, give him the thumbs, like, give me up. So I get up top, and the guy says, he goes, everything's fine. He goes, you're hyperventilating. And I was like, hyperventilating? That's weird. But I wasn't going back down either, because I was like, I didn't like that feeling. I didn't know what was going to happen, so I didn't go.
Right.
A year later, I'm taking my sons. We have called a Blake Man road trip. So my sons, we went down to Orlando. We're at one of the theme parks. And so we go on this ride called the Hulk. I grew up in California. I'm around roller coasters, no big deal. Strap in, roller coaster, 45 seconds, we're back. As we're pulling in, the conductor, whatever, they're conducting the ride, they say over the loudspeaker, hey, someone just threw up. It's going to take a couple minutes to clean up so we can get in. And I'm like, okay, whatever. But the thing that was over my head, it had me locked in tight, because the ride is very violent. So you got to be locked in tight. And so as I'm locked in, I'm starting to feel constricted. Like, I feel like I can't get out. If I wanted to get out, I can't get out of this thing. And so then it started. So I tried to start talking to the person next to me. I'm like, just talk to them, get your mind off of it.
Yeah.
They weren't really interested in talking to a stranger. My son was right behind me, and I'm like, hey, how'd you enjoy the ride? And there's a typical teenager, oh, it's good, Dad. And I'm like, I need some more. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm like, okay. And it's just welling up, and I can't stop it, and I'm about to start screaming. I take my hat off, start waving, like, get me out of here. Right when I put my hand up, and I'm about to start yelling, because I'm praying, and I'm panicking, and I can't stop it. Right when I raise up my, the thing starts moving. As soon as that thing popped off my chest, it was like nothing happened. My body, I didn't feel anything. It was so weird. And we tried to get on one more ride, and there was a lap thing, and they put it over, but I was locked in. I had to stop it right away. I couldn't do it. So when I realized, that was my first experience having, like, God's like, oh, you don't trust the anxiety. I'm going to allow you to feel what this feels like. Dude, it's terrifying. I couldn't imagine every Sunday battling with that. And the other part that some who are not in paid ministry may not understand is that when you're doing a sermon, unless you're doing a sermon series, you are praying and coming up with a new insight each week to help a church, a very diverse church, from, it could be from ages 9 to 80, from all kinds of demographics, and you're trying to bring a word so that it's, and you're communicating clearly so they understand. That in and of itself brings stress. And there's a small secret that most ministers may not tell you. We also get blocks. There's also times we have no idea, even on a Saturday night, what we're going to share. And so we call a friend, hey, what are you preaching? And normally something will click, but that have anxiety or panic.
I've gotten that call from Tim before.
You have. To have that and then have a panic disorder on top of that, man. So I really appreciate you sharing that. It's a struggle. I'm grateful. That God through his grace has brought you through. And I'm grateful you said, without it, you may not be a Christian. And I know I thought about this as well. you probably would not have gotten to your dream spot, Cleveland, had it not been for that detour through Worcester.
No doubt. I mean, when amazing. I talk about, when I said I interviewed for this job and I didn't get it, that would have been the biggest train wreck ever had I gotten that job. The difference of perspective. I mean, I was like manipulatively trying to get the job before. And the second time I came through, it was like, I don't know if you guys want me. I am damaged goods. But God is good. He wants us to wrestle with him. I've had to do a lot of wrestling over the years. And, just a different perspective is always good. So.
Fantastic. Well, Ryan, I really appreciate you sharing. Again, Ryan and Corinne Painter lead the Greater Cleveland Church of Christ. You can find them on their website, wherever else, social media. But Ryan's a really good dude, good friend. Weird. We are super, super different. But I definitely love and respect them and love and respect your faith. And I really appreciate you sharing and being vulnerable with us. Amen.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So for those of you, I'm going to give a little website plug to see if I can do it correctly. Do I have it right? There it is. If you have any questions or you need to know where to find us, you can go to www.unpresentablepartspod.com. And you can go to the Soon Come, you can go to the Eve Edition to find out about what the women are doing. But that's all there. So really grateful for Ryan being with us. Until next time, we'll see you soon.